The characters in the script are triangular pieces of Swiss cheese. You and I are real people, with thoughts, feelings, wants, insecurities, and shoe sizes, and recollections about our favorite moments in various video games. There is no doubt that you and I, in this universe, in this dimension, are indeed real people. And we recognize each other as such. If I were to ask you what your pants size is, where you were born, PC or Mac, iPhone or Android, or what your favorite food is, you would know. Because you are a real person. I hope. Consider Romeo and Juliet, arguably the most well-known script in the entire world, in the history of humankind, really. Romeo Montague, just like you and me, is a real person in that universe. If we could ask Romeo about his friends, his favorite food, his memories of playing with his dad when he was 10 years old, he would know the answers to these questions. He's a real person in that universe, just like we are real people in this universe. However, we know that Romeo is a fictitious character. He's not real. As much as we'd like to ask him more questions about Mercutio, he's not able to tell us. And Shakespeare is not coming back to answer those questions either. What we have in the script is all the information there is. This means there are missing pieces of information about Romeo. He's a person, so he prefers a certain color when it comes to his pants. He knows it. We don't know it. He has a favorite food, whatever it is, but we just don't know it. Those pieces of information that are missing, the ones we just simply cannot obtain, unable to obtain, those are the holes in the Swiss cheese. And if we say that characters in the script are cheese, that Romeo Montague is a cheese, then we, too, are also cheese. June cheese, Kira cheese, Dave cheese, XYZ cheese, your name underscore cheese, .mp3. With our own distinct smells, origins, flavors, colors, textures, history, and so much more. We are our own individual cheeses, and no two cheeses smell and look and taste alike. The only difference between the Swiss cheese and us is that we are full block, triangular shaped cheeses. We don't have any holes. We don't have that problem because we pretty much know everything there is to know about ourselves. And the idea here is to examine and analyze this Swiss cheese. Identify where, how big, and what shapes these holes are in the Swiss cheese, and then turn the same analytical eye on our own cheeses to identify the parts of our cheeses, who we are, what our story has been, what our journey is, to scoop out those portions of our cheeses and to place them into the holes of the Swiss cheese. I wear 9.5-sized shoes. I don't know what Romeo's actual shoe size is, but it is now 9.5. I'm deciding that is so. We don't know what Romeo's favorite food is, the script doesn't say, but now it's Korean barbecue and tacos. Carne asada, salsa verde, of course. What we're doing is filling the holes of the Swiss cheese with our own information, our own selves. Injecting into the Swiss cheese the information that makes us who we are as human beings, as actors. And as we insert the pieces of our own cheese into these holes, what we're creating is this wonderful hybrid fusion cheese that has never existed before. The June Swiss cheese. That smells, looks, tastes, and feels like no other cheese like it. Anywhere in the world, throughout history, and throughout the future. Is this not the very definition of authenticity? Sincerity, honesty, and believability in voice characterization. Bringing our authentic selves, along with our own brand of aroma, color, and texture, into the Swiss cheese. and truly, honestly, creating a never-before-existed piece of triangular block of cheese. It's pretty exciting, even if you don't like cheese. Casting would be foaming at the mouth, wanting to take a bite of that. It needs to be said that the Swiss cheese by itself is also perfectly fine for consumption. It pairs really well with Merlot and some grapes. And if you consume the Swiss cheese as is, straight from the pages of the script, perfectly fine. It's what reading the script is, with our eyes, with our brains. Now, as actors, we know that simply reading it out loud is never going to be enough. Not at all. Neither is the act of giving the Swiss cheese right back to casting. When we think, what is it that they want? And try to tailor our performance to what we think it is that they want, which is, by the way, impossible to know unless you can read minds or have a magical crystal ball, and send out the audition MP3, we're essentially giving the Swiss cheese right back with the holes filled with what looks like Swiss cheese that we've cleverly disguised as Swiss cheese. It might look like it. It might even smell like it. But I promise, once the casting director takes a bite, she will know. The color will be slightly off. The smell, the texture will be slightly off. And I guarantee she will taste the fabrication and not like it. Instead of trying to create a full block Swiss cheese with what you think Swiss cheese tastes and smells like, as in trying to guesstimate what casting is looking for, I'm encouraging you to fill those holes with your own cheeses. To intentionally blend the flavors and the colors of the Swiss cheese with your own. Boldly, confidently, unapologetically. Casting will appreciate the boldness in presenting your unique interpretation of the character and the authenticity of your person, rather than a meek and guesstimated and vague and general attempt at trying to match what the Swiss cheese should be. They're looking for you. You, not the Swiss cheese they sent out to come right back, but rather you. As a concept, as an analogy, I think it makes sense. It's fine, you're smart people, but how do we do that, right? What is the process to analyze these cheeses and to create this fusion cheese? We do it through Uta Hagen's 9 questions. Uta Hagen's a well-known theater practitioner, super well-known for her 9 questions that actors should ask before stepping onto the stage. Her questions have helped countless actors, and it's what I use every day. I've simply rephrased her questions and reformed them to make those questions fit the context of a voice actor. Question number 1. Who am I? This is easy. Who am I? Who is this character? You. You are who you are. And you are this character. We are not trying to put on this character's shoes. We are not getting into this character's headspace or anything like that. We are simply existing, thinking, moving, talking, yelling, singing, and swinging our claymores at our enemies, as we authentically, naturally would do in our own real lives. You don't swing claymores at your enemies? What's wrong with you? You're a character. So am I. Believe you and me, this Jun Yoon that you know is a character I play. Every single day, for the past 42 years, at the time of this recording, and from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed, I play this character named Jun. In fact, I do it so well, when I'm not awake, I dream like Jun. When I extend my hand out for a handshake, right, and say, "Hi, I'm Jun." People believe me without a moment of hesitation. Before COVID, of course. I am also 100,000% confident that I am the best actor suited to play the character of Jun, because there is no actor in the world who can play the character of Jun Yoon better than I can. absolutely no one. Not even jealousy. June is a character, and I am the best actor for this role. Then this thought becomes naturally obvious. Why don't I use the character that I know the best? The character that I can naturally, authentically play without even thinking about acting, and put that character in the story, in that audition. Look, many things are uncertain in this world, but that character, in whatever story that I may choose to put him into, I know that character will be real, authentic, honest, 100% of the time. Because I'm simply playing the role as myself. The character that I know how to play the best. That I do it unconsciously, subconsciously, instead of trying to be someone else. You hear "be yourself" a lot out there. This is why. This is the logical, thought-out explanation behind the sentiment of "you're enough." Bring yourself, be yourself. Because you are, indeed, enough. And you are authentic in this universe as you are. Let's say that you come across an audition for a character named Sam. For the purposes of that audition, I want you to cross out the name Sam and put your name there. The name is no longer Sam, it's your name. Number two, what is my relationship? Here's a random line from a random audition script that doesn't exist. Excellent. I trust that we will have zero problems from here on, right? Every time we speak, we're speaking to someone. Even if it's you just talking to yourself, you're still talking to yourself, right? There's always another character. Sometimes the script will tell you, excellent. I trust that we will have zero problems from here on, right, Mom? Then we know it's Mom that we're talking to. But most of the time, it does not tell you. And when there's zero information about who you could be talking with in this audition line, we, as actors, have to make a choice. A choice. We have already established that you are the character in the story. But you may not necessarily say these words, or may never have said them, ever. But if you were to say these words to someone, who could that potentially be? It should not be some random friend. This is your story, a story which revolves around you. Therefore, this person that you're speaking to using that line must be someone that you know. Either from real life or someone you've gotten to know inside a fictitious world very well. I'm a huge, gigantic, enormous fan of Final Fantasy VII, and I know Cloud Strife. As if he was real in my world, I know that guy. So, for demonstration purposes only, let's say that I'm talking to Cloud. Now we have more information about what is happening in this brief moment. I'm talking to Cloud. That Cloud. At the same time, the fact that we have identified the other character in the conversation as Cloud, it's just not enough. We need more information. The hole in the Swiss cheese labeled relationship is big. And we've only placed a tiny little small sliver in there by simply identifying who this person is. What matters more, what's more important, is the relationship. Just as I have in 1997, when my 17-year-old self delved into his imagination and made himself a part of Avalanche, Cloud and I are good friends and colleagues in arm. In Disc 3, after Nibelheim, akin to Wedge or Biggs, maybe, and Jesse. I imagine being able to jokingly punch him on the shoulder, and both of us being able to comfortably laugh while I feel my fist bounce off the toned muscle in his right shoulder. No, I'm not envious. Of course not. These words in the audition script will come out of my mouth one way, according to this relationship. If I were talking with someone else, with whom I have a different relationship, these words will most certainly come out differently. Identify who it is you're speaking to, and specify what that relationship is. How the two of you feel about each other, and this choice, not defined and not informed by the script, but this choice, the bolder, stronger the choice you can make it to be, the more engaging will be for you to perform, and the more interesting the performance will be for the listener. Number three, where am I and what surrounds me? I'm going to choose to say this line to Cloud, aboard the little ship that goes to Costa del Sol after the Junon story. Our ragtag crew stows aboard a ship and makes our way across the ocean to another continent, and the precise and specific location inside the ship being the lower deck of the ship. See if you can picture it with me if you played this game. What surrounds me? Metal walls, boxes of things that are being transported to their destinations that are wrapped under tarps and tie-downs, a few bodies here and there of the crew from whom we've stolen their uniforms. Very dark and dim blue lighting. If we were on a sunny beach of Costa del Sol and lounging on the beach with drinks with little umbrellas in them, this line would certainly come out differently. If I were on a hospital bed, dying, while Cloud stood over me holding my hand as I forced out this line with my last breath, this line would come out very differently. Going back, if we were in the corner of the lower decks, this could tell a very different story, as opposed to from the middle of the room with everybody around us. The location makes a difference. The physical location makes a difference, and what's around us makes a difference. And the more specific you can make it, the better. Number four, what time is it? Mechanically, hopefully you're aware that you sound different throughout the day. You orally, physically, sound different in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, and at 3 a.m. Specifying the time in which this moment takes place can also help to inform you, the actor, about how this line could be delivered. In my story, it's 11 p.m. Under the cover of darkness, we jumped on board, and by the time we've taken care of the guards and have stolen their uniform, it's 11 p.m. Now, if this was taking place at 4 a.m., if this ship was a red-eye ship, where everyone is expected to be asleep stowing aboard, would have been a much easier task, probably. It's 4 a.m., and therefore, I would sound a certain way. Because it's so quiet around here, without the hubbub of other people, we would have to be a lot quieter to be not detected. Specificity in the choices that we make bring information to us, so that we would know how to say these words. Number five, given circumstance. Up till now, we've been filling the empty holes of the cheese, assuming that no information was given to us from the get-go. If the script does not inform us of these details, then we need to fill the holes, as we've discussed so far. Again, the example audition line. Excellent. I trust that we will have zero problems from here on, right? Now, this tiny little moment is only a tiny little sliver of a larger story. Meaning, there are words above it, and there are words below it as the story continues on. The given circumstance points to the story that existed prior to this moment and how it all leads up to this specific moment. In this instance, we do have some information, a hint. And it's found in the phrase, from here on, which indicates there have been problems in the past. Whether the problem was a centuries-long feud between two clans or a problem that may have happened 20 seconds ago. There was definitely some sort of a problem in the past, and it has apparently been resolved. I'm sure you can come up with your own interpretation on what that story could be, but here are a few that I can think of. My neighbor, John, whose house had been under construction for a few months, noise and pollution and dust and is hanging out on the front lawn of his house. I happen to come outside to retrieve the newspaper, and I see him, and seeing how the construction is finally over, I tell him, hey, so it's all finished, huh? It looks great. And he may reply, yeah, it's all done here. Sorry for all the noise and the dust and all of that. To which I may reply with, excellent. I trust that we'll have zero problems from here on, right? In a friendly, neighborly way, maybe. A little fist bump and go back to the house. Here's another one. It's 3 a.m. The construction finally concluded earlier today, and now John is having a loud party to celebrate the remodel. My kids have woken up for the third time due to the noise, so I grab my katana, walk over to the house, go inside to the living room, grab John by the cuff of his shirt, and throw him against the TV on the wall as it shatters into a million pieces. As the shocked guests react, I unsheath the katana and pierce his left shoulder with the blade. There's blood everywhere, and I can hear the sirens in the distance already. I slowly lean down into his face as I rotate the katana in his shoulder and say the following very slowly and poignantly as I maybe enjoy the sound of his pained breaths. Excellent. I trust that we will have zero problems from here on, right? I'm the president of the Homeowners Association in this community, and I hold some influential powers over my neighbors, let's say. Helen and her family recently moved into this community, and they're obviously not well aware of who I am and how things work around here. Against the rules, she builds a fence around her front lawn. So I casually inform her that this was against the community's rules and that it needs to be taken down. Of course, she proceeds to ignore me and keeps it up. So I obviously hire my construction guys to tear it down for her in this neighborly gesture and send her the invoice. Maybe in rebellion, Helen knocks over my mailbox. So naturally, right, her husband has an unfortunate accident that almost kills him. Realizing what has happened, Helen comes over and apologizes with a large envelope filled with $20 bills. To which I might reply, excellent. I trust that we'll have zero problems from here on, right? Yes, I'm aware that I have an antagonistic tendency when it comes to these things. They're more fun for me. What do you want from me? In the three stories I've given you so far, three distinctly different given circumstances and their resulting performances. And if you were the character in this story, you would know how you would say these words. That may be different than the way I've done it. And these instances are, indeed, fictitious in nature. John's a good guy. We have a great neighborly relationship. No worries. I have no idea who Helen is. I don't know. However, I can imagine how I would say those words if those given circumstances were actual occurrences in my imagination as I record this. Now is a great time for this question. If we are relying on the fact that we're using ourselves in the story, then shouldn't these contextual information that we're establishing also be based on our own history and experience? Yes, indeed. For auditions and characters that lean closer to real-world stories, it would be most beneficial to make your contextual choices, strong and bold contextual choices, from the real-world experiences and history of your character, which is you. At the same time, character voice acting is dynamic and vast, involving characters and stories that are way out of our normal boundaries of what real life is. Here's a question. If you had won the lottery, right, and received $1.3 billion because one ticket was sold, how would you react? You know what you would buy. You know how you'd spend the money. Sure, you know what you would do with it. But how would you react? This scenario is hypothetical. It's fictitious. Yet, you know the precise answer to that question, do you not? This means we do indeed have the ability to create a fictitious circumstance and authentically exist inside of it. Everyone. Because you're able to imagine your life as a millionaire, more specifically, precisely, you'd be able to imagine what you would do, how you would react when that sixth number clicks into place. And your brain realizes that you had just won $1.2 billion. Filling the holes of the Swiss cheese that are labeled given circumstance is very important. The more specific you can get, sensing a theme by now, hopefully, the more specific the information you can establish and the specific choices that you can make, the more interesting your performances become, both for you and for the listener, and more authentic your delivery naturally becomes. Number 6, what do I want? Whenever we communicate, there is an objective. By now, with choices that have been made in the prior steps, the objective, or what you want, should become clear. In my story, in the friendly exchange, the version number 1 that ends in a fist bump with John, I want him to know that I'm relieved the construction is over, and that I accept his apology and let him know that I'm not angry, which is further verified by the fist bump, and let's hope that this doesn't happen again. I might give him a hint of warning for future reassurance at the very end there, maybe. And it's something that I'll be willing to play with and see how it comes out. To conclude, the work that we do as actors, the craft that we hone, is multifaceted. One of the facets is the active exercise of the creative imagination muscle that allows us to dream up these strong and bold choices in establishing the context, and to do it consistently. Another facet is the work of increasing our self-awareness. Actors who know a lot about themselves as people are, in fact, generally better actors. They've observed, analyzed, and studied themselves and others, and then archived all of that information into their bones. It's having a high level of self-awareness that allows you to really look at your cheese and efficiently scoop out a good chunk that could fit in those certain holes. One must know the self really well. Another facet is the ability to exist inside a story, as bare and vulnerable as we are, giving ourselves the permission, granting us the freedom, and absolutely eliminating all judgment, unapologetically. so that we can focus singularly on existing authentically in that specific moment. In that moment when those words may fall out of our mouths as they naturally would. The last facet is connected to the one I just talked about, and that facet is allowing us to play. The freedom of play. On stage, these things are called plays. On screen, they're screenplays. The word play is inherent in our industry. And if this is not fun, if what you've done just now in creating these fictitious stories and existing inside of these stories and figuring out how you could have fun with this story and how fun you could exist and how much fun you could have existing in these stories, I also feel that's a very important element of anything we do. Sure enough, we can tangibly hear when a voice actor is having fun. Max Mittleman is a wonderful example of this with his portrayal of Ito in Genshin Impact. If you play, you know. When you listen to the guy talk, you can hear the fun. Can you imagine how fun that session is? You can hear the fun. Lastly, happiness. This process, this entire thing, should provide you with happiness. Not necessarily the roles that you book, although that's great as well. But the process of gearing up for the audition recording session, the execution of your acting, and the consistent persistency in the desire to hone one's capabilities in characterization. When the process of acting becomes, or is for a lot of us, when that process is happiness, then you know you're most definitely in the right place. It is entirely possible to discover that this is a happiness as well, if you're not aware already. Everyone belongs here, and everyone is offered a seat because everybody knows how to play one character, at least, very well. However you may arrive here in this industry, as long as the happiness is undoubtedly driving your efforts and is experienced throughout the entire process of characterization in voice acting, you are going to succeed. Of this, I have zero doubt. I hope this information has been helpful to you. This is version 2.0, and there may be even more insightful revisions down the line as I continue to hone my own craft of teaching acting. Should you have any questions about any of this, please feel free to reach out, email, DM, whatever. Education is a huge happiness in my life, and I literally and genuinely look forward to discussing this concept with you and helping you on your journey as a voice actor.